lost you for a minute there.
Got me now.
Blair and Barker. It's getting close, Kevin. Opening day, Thursday, Tampa, the 2024 championship season. Everybody calls it the 2024 championship season. The Jays have one more game left in spring.
Oakland does?
Everybody always.
Every divide?
I mean, yeah, it's technically.
Every show in Oakland's going on and going, hey, welcome to the championship season.
No, technically, no. Major League Baseball calls it the 2024 championship season. Right. It just does. It's a thing.
Okay.
The Jays wrap up their Grapefruit League schedule today against the Pittsburgh Pirates, 1 o'clock on Sportsnet and Sportsnet Plus. There's a couple of days off for the folks. And then we get into the real business in Tampa. Kevin Gausman will start today against the Pirates. At Jays lineup, Springer, Bichette, Turner, Varsho, Kiermaier, Kiner, Falefa, Biggio, Servin, Palmigiani. John Schneider, the manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. Kevin has kind of removed the mystery from the lineup, at least. We're still awaiting clarification on Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson status, but we know that Daniel Vogelbach, Ernie Clement, Davis Schneider, and Brian Servin have made the team. And no surprise, Servin makes the team because Danny Jansen's hurt. Vogelbach makes the team because we haven't really seen Joey Votto since he rolled his ankle stepping on that bat. Ernie Clement and Davis Schneider, you can make the case that Ernie Clement was one of the best players in spring training. Your thoughts on the roster, such as it is?
Yeah, I think they're trying to take the best 26 north that they can possibly
and
take
the healthiest
north.
26 too.
Well, it's you're trying to, you know, wean out what you don't think you can use early in the season. It's you know, I don't want to say it's genius, but it's what has to be done to get off to a good start. They have to. Like, there's no in-betweens here now of getting off to slow starts. And for me, their offense is not good enough to play catch-up. Like, you got to gain a little momentum when it comes to the wins and maintain that throughout an entire season. Obviously, you're going to have some hiccups. You're going to have some bumps in the road. But you need to get off to a good start. And you just like the way they're sort of finalizing their team, the guys that you thought were on the bubble that are not on the bubble anymore, you know, Santiago Espinal not being here anymore, just what goes with him trying to, you know, keep him on the team, keep him happy, keep his friends happy, like all those things have been taken care of. Now you're thinking that the talent that you have, you know, will give John better options to make the right decision when that decision comes.
You think
about
that's the case?
Him. Yeah, I think so. I got down there, that's exactly the case.
Do you like this? Do you like this team better than last year's team?
No, I would much rather have a legit cleanup hitter, you know, bringing just Turner here. Look, it's nice. Like, I'd rather have him, the Varsho, hitting cleanup. And if you want to air quote, protect Vladdy and you know, get those at-bats that say Dalton and maybe you could throw in Chapman we're getting last year. Yeah, look, they're probably a better team with runners in scoring position because of Turner. Do they need an extra guy? Absolutely. Like that, it's not finalized. That's why they're saying that they, you know, are putting more pressure on everybody else that's here. The Varshos of the world, the Kirks of the world, the big names that are up front, you know, the George Springers of the world. Where you been? Like those are the names that need to step up, and there's reasons why they're saying those things out loud. So, yeah, look, is the mindset better? You would think so. You know, that team-wide thing? The team-wide thing is do damage on what you can do damage on. That's the team-wide approach. It's not, you know, swing at this, don't swing at that. It's if I like the ball in, I'm going to look for the ball in until I get two strikes. If I don't like the ball in, I'm not going to swing at it because I can't do damage on that. That's it. Well, that's why you see Vladdy early in counts now taking sliders middle away because that Roger center effect, ball don't carry to right center. You know, I know it's closer, but it ain't carrying there. Why would I swing at it until I have to swing at it? Because you can't do damage on it. That's the team-wide approach. So, yeah, you sort of like those parts of it. You like Turner hitting cleanup instead of the other names. Do they need an extra guy? Absolutely. Like that. That's why, again, some teams.
Well, you said you like the roster.
Yeah, what they got was what they got.
Right.
Like it's.
But it's not as good as last year's roster.
No, I'm not saying that. You could almost argue that it's the same as last year, minus Chapman. Like, again, it's they're trying to take away at-bats, those big-time at-bats. That's why you see them talking about moving Bo around. against really good pitching because they know that, those certain at-bats that come up against the really good pitchers. The khakis are telling them that this guy in this position gets the most at-bats against this team, against this pitcher, and you want your best hitter getting those or almost all those at-bats. So, yeah, do I like it better? Better's a strong word. Is it more competitive because of who they brought in, a veteran guy who you want to have those at-bats? You could argue that. Better's a stretch. Better, they needed more than one. They needed more than one Turner. How's that?
Yeah. No, I'm with you completely.
Yeah.
Kevin Gausman gets a start today, planning to throw around 55 pitches or three innings. Shai Davidi joins us in a few minutes, and he'll talk us. He had a chance to sit down with Kevin Gausman yesterday, and we'll get a sense of what the plans are for him. I would think, Kevin, that if everything goes according to plan today, Kevin Gausman, we're probably going to see him in Houston, starting the Houston series.
Well, I don't know. Look, I think it depends on, again, a lot of this, Kevin's driving that
right
ship. So if he's feeling good, say not today, or, you know, they like the velocity, they like split finger, occasional slider that he throws, like it looks like he's getting the ball and throwing it, and he wakes up tomorrow and he's raring and ready to go, and they want to give him the extra day. So I would assume it's either going to be the fourth game against the Rays, because that's the extra day, or the first game in Houston, which I've heard they don't want to throw him against Houston. They'd rather throw him against the Yankees. So it would sound like he's either getting the fourth game or one of the games against the Yankees. So they're trying to maneuver around. Again, this gets back to you walk up to a veteran guy who's been
there.
Why
wouldn't they want him against Houston?
That's a great question. I don't know if I know the answer to that. I've asked around to try and figure that out.
Is there
a... I would think it's... You know, it would depend on the other guys, how they're lined up. You don't want to disrupt that. So I think from what I understand and the people that I talked to when I was there, there were some unknowns on the feelings that he was feeling after he was throwing. But it sounds like he's felt better after the couple of times that he's thrown since I talked to this person. And maybe that's being rushed a little bit more and they feel a little bit more confident because of the velocity, because of the break on the split finger and how he's recovering the day after he throws, that he would be okay if they give him the extra day, right? You know, the first three guys that are throwing, you don't really know the fourth guy against Tampa. So it's either that day or however they want to maneuver it after that. And I'm sure, again, it's about, you know, not disrupting the first three guys' routines, too. Mm-hmm. So you got to be careful with that. There's a lot of things going into this. Because, again, when he throws, you don't want him to throw and have another bump in the road. You just want him after that to give him the ball every 5 days. So I'm sure they're going to do the best they can do, not only for him, but for the team to get off to a good start.
Just trying to see if there's any numbers against Houston that would... Well, okay. Well, he has numbers against Houston. Career numbers aren't good. Yeah.
Short porch and left, split finger, veteran team, you know, sitting on certain pitches, a little hard to throw to.
Like, there's some ZRA is over five against Houston.
Yeah, I don't even know if that has anything to do with it. I just know who I've talked to. That was the conversation. They were having the conversation not only with smart people that are around the team, the pitching coach, the manager, and the actual person that was throwing. So, you know, I'm sure they come up with the right decision.
Okay, we got to talk about... Now, Buck mentioned this during the telecast, and first I heard of it.
First I'd heard of it, too.
I thought it was... I mean, I'm...
Genius.
I thought it was... Well, I don't know if it's genius, but it's genius. I thought it was... It was interesting, at least, and apparently not many other people did. So Buck said that John Schneider had told him that it is not out of the question. Indeed, it is possible that we will see Bo Bichette hitting in the number three spot and perhaps in the cleanup spot. Most of us, I think, assumed that the A lineup would be Springer, Bichette, Guerrero, Turner. And then from that point on, you go lefty, righty, lefty, righty, lefty. That mm-hmm. was kind of the thinking. Mm-hmm. You know, Bo... To his credit, when asked about this yesterday, and I'm kind of paraphrasing here, essentially said, look, I'd like some consistency. You know, he said he likes consistency. Whatever spot it is.
Preaches a habit.
Exactly. Whatever the spot is, he likes consistency. Mm-hmm. Springer, we know, doesn't want, I mean, we know he doesn't want out of the leadoff spot.
30 homers. Yeah. That's all we want.
Yeah. But I mean, no, but I'm saying he doesn't want to go out of the lead. We talked about this last year. He wants to be the leadoff.
Yeah, his bat's getting too slow to be a run producer anymore. He's better off in the leadoff.
Anyhow, but so the point is now you got Springer who won't move out of the leadoff spot, Bichette who'd prefer consistency. Then you got Vladdy who said yesterday, I don't care where they hit me, which I don't necessarily buy. But and then you got Justin Turner. You surprised that we're starting to hear this already with Bichette?
No, I told you this. The one theme that I took away from there was the urgency to get off to a good start. They're going to face really good pitching.
I mean, they had urgency last year, didn't do it.
Yeah, but the expectations where they were winning a World Series, it's not that anymore. Like, they don't feel that way. Like, I think in the room, they feel like they can. Is anybody else picking the Blue Jays to win the World Series?
No, but I would think. But I would think there would be more urgency.
Urgency early in the season to get off to a good start.
Last year
is what you don't have because of what you don't have, and what you do have is a guy that can get a bunch of hits with a dude standing at second against really good pitching. And seems to me that a lot of the times the other guys against really good pitching aren't the greatest. That number comes up a lot with a dude standing at second against some really good pitching. Who would you rather have up? Say Bo or Vladdy or George Springer?
Good luck selling Bo in that.
Yeah, I don't think it's about selling that. Again, it gets back to in the room. Sometimes it's got to be, I pay you to do things. If I pay you to move to the three, John didn't say it was all the time. John said it was an occasional opportunity to get our best hitter. If I'm Bo, I'm loving hearing that. He thinks I'm your best hitter. That's wonderful. And we're trying to maneuver our lineup around to get you to come up in the biggest moments so it can help us win a baseball game. Yeah, I don't see a problem with that. And again, it gets back to that. You got to raise your hand and go, you work for us. Like Bo, I know what he said. And most of the time that will happen, him hitting in the two hole. But there'll be some times where you got to work it around when you think that Vladdy ain't real good against that guy or Turner works better somewhere else or it's better off to bring Bo up than Turner up. Like, there's some thought going into that, and this is John's job to sell it to whoever he has to sell it to, or just say, I'm the manager. Go out and hit where I put you. There has to be a little of that, too, and I'm sure they're buying into that. They understand it, that they got to get off to a good start. It's beneficial for everybody to do that. How's that?
I guess. I'm just...
So you're a feelings guy early in the season?
I'm not a feelings guy.
They gave Bo $33 million to eliminate the feelings.
Yeah, I don't know.
They have.
I'm not a feelings guy. I just find it interesting that in the third last game of spring training, now all of a sudden you're starting to talk about doing this to the lineup.
I'm sure this did not happen overnight. I'm sure knowing Don Mattingly and listening to the way they talk about Donnie Baseball, I'm sure this conversation has happened. It's been thrown against the wall. What do you think about this? And then it just started getting ramped up because we started seeing him actually maneuvering around the first four guys, right? And then when you visibly see it, then people start going, well, why is this happening? And then the conversation starts to happen. And yeah, look, if I'm Bo, I'm happy that they think you're the best hitter, which he is. He's the best hitter. He may not be the best power hitter. He's the best hitter on the team. You need one hit to save your paycheck a month, you're probably going to give it to Bo. And I think that's the way they're thinking about it.
What's your level of concern with Romano and Swanson?
It has to be a little bit.
I guess we need to, and again, maybe we find out more today. I don't see how either of them break with the team. That would mean Pop, Pearson, Tiedemann apparently is in the mix, according to John. Yariel Rodriguez, they liked what they saw from him this weekend.
How could you not?
I thought he was pretty
just
impressive.
Just refining all that stuff that goes with him.
It was interesting watching him. Like, he's not afraid to throw on the block. I'll say that. It was interesting watching.
His misses are good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Brendan Little is a guy.
They're on the fence about.
In there as well.
Yeah.
It looks very much as if Chad Green gets the leverage situations early with
Romano. Well, if he's the Chad Green we just saw, like he's eliminated the breaking ball.
I was going to ask you that. 95, 96 with a lot of movement.
Yeah, that's what it is, right? I mean, you when you're working on things, this gets back to, and I hate to sometimes agree with you because it just makes me not feel good and sleep good at night. But he's one of the guys that spring training doesn't matter, right? It's early on. You're working on grips, working on a different mechanical thing, working on where you're standing on the rubber, trying to get the breaking ball. Will it be better or good enough for me to throw it to a good left-handed hitter when I need to get it out? Well, the hits need that.
Obviously, so right now, he's just going to go with the two pitches.
Yeah, he's grip it, rip it. But basically, that's what it is, right? You're gripping the slider the way you want it, and you throw it as hard as you can throw it to have it tunnel longer and have it break. So if you miss, it's a good miss. It's not a bad miss, right? You saw early in camp some of them floppy ones because he's working on grip, and you could see him actually reaching down and thinking about it. Where am I holding it at? And you forget about, you know, throwing it and having it break and having it end up where you want it to end up. So do I like him in the ninth inning? Probably not. Jordan Romano's earned the right to be there right end of the season. Do they need an extra guy? Probably, if they're in the mix and you know, you need that one solidified for sure guy. Maybe they're going out and getting that early in the season. You like Romano.
Mm-hmm.
He's shown you nothing to say that he can't get the job done. It's just those unknowns of when he starts abusing the slider and not using the fastball, those guys you should probably be using him against. But who are we? So far, it's been working. To your question, absolutely. Anytime you talk about shooting guys' elbows with stuff this late in spring, it's no question. And you're talking about forearms and, you know, split fingers. Swanson does a split finger. What's that thing very hard on? Your forearm. And everything that goes in here because of how what you have to do to get it to break and pronating and all those things that go into that. So, yeah, there's some little worry there. Hopefully they can clean that up. And they're a much better team with those two guys in the pen. They're a top 10 bullpen.
Yes.
With everybody healthy.
Yes.
That's, you know, and they're probably a top 7 or 8 rotation in baseball. That's why I know a lot of people are trying to keep them out of the playoffs. I just don't know how you do it. If you have a top 7 or 8 rotation, you have a top 10 bullpen, and you have a complete gold glove defense as a team, isn't that what it's all about?
Well,
isn't that how you make the playoffs?
It's run prevention.
Not even winning games?
I don't know. Didn't really work last year.
I don't know how they made the playoffs. Did they not make the playoffs?
They had 3 fewer wins last year than the year before. They had 89 wins.
All it seems to sound like listening to the people running this team is they made the playoffs.
They didn't win in the playoffs.
Then you need some luck. We know that. It's getting to the playoffs. Mm. And then once you get in the playoffs.
I mean, I think I've got them down as a playoff team, but I think
I don't know how you keep them out of it.
They're one of like 4 teams. Somebody in the Central is going to surprise you. I still think Minnesota's the best. We'll do our picks
later.
There's
5 teams in the American League fighting for those 3 playoff spots. 1, 2, 3 that you could throw it against the wall and make an argument. I don't know if you could argue.
And there is a chance that somebody like Detroit might sneak up there or something like that. A lot of people like Detroit. And they do play in it. I mean, if you're gonna find a dark horse out of any division,
it's 87 wins will win you that division. Yeah. That's it's easier to win the division than it is to make a wild card.
By the way, we will be moving to a new time slot tomorrow, 2 to 4 Eastern on Sportsnet 590, the Fan of Sportsnet. They're even gonna stick us in a new studio, which would be nice. And we will be making our picks. Wednesday, I guess. I already had to submit mine for a thing at sportsnet.ca.
The 3 wild card spots are hard to pick in both leagues.
Yeah.
They're hard.
Yeah,
other than the Phillies in the number one spot.
They're a crapshoot.
It's hard. Like, you can pick numerous teams and be okay picking them. That's why, you know, it's not the easiest thing to do. I think division winners, for the most part.
I think division winners are pretty clear.
Yeah. Now, if Garrett Cole was healthy, picking the American League East will be a little tougher.
Yeah,
it's not as tough now.
Yeah, I do think that the wild card teams are.
It's not easy.
There's six or seven realistic in the National League. I think there's 6 or 7 teams that could do it.
Other than the Phillies.
Yeah, there's a
Phillies probably the front runner to be that and have that number one spot.
But
and then
I mean,
you could pick
Arizona, San Francisco,
San Diego. Yeah,
somebody out of the Central. Maybe the Mets.
I'd throw the Reds in there. Like there's some teams in there.
I'd throw the Reds in there too. I'd absolutely throw the Reds in there. I just don't. The two Central divisions are
not real good.
They're not real good.
They're not.
You know, they to me are other than the wild card. Other than the wild card, the NL Central to me is the hardest to pick. Like, you could literally pick, you could pick the Cubs, the Cards, or the, even the Reds, as some people are. And I can make a case for you. You got to figure
the American League is, it's what team you feel comfortable that could win,
yeah,
that could have 89 wins.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Shai Davidi of Sportsnet is in Dunedin, and of course he will be with the team in Tampa as well. We'll get Shai's take on what to expect from Kevin Gausman today and the finishing touches to the Jays roster as well. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back in a few minutes. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and Sportsnet.
Hey, it's Ailish Forafar.
And I'm Justin Cuthbert.
Join us as we discuss the most important sports stories of the day and tee up the biggest games of the night.
It's The Fan Pregame, 6 p.m. weekdays on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
There's one more Grapefruit League game for the Blue Jays. It's this afternoon against Pittsburgh Pirates, 107 first pitch on Sportsnet. Springer, Bichette, Turner, Varsho, Kiermaier, Kiner, Falefa at second base, Biggio at third, Servin behind the plate, Tommy Johnny at first base, Kevin Gausman on the mound. How many different third basemen are we going to see for the Blue Jays this year, Kevin Parker?
That's a great question. I mean, if everybody else is hitting the way that everybody else is supposed to be hitting, I don't think they care. But if not, I mean, you've already gotten two, like Biggio and IKF. There's two right there.
Turner's played third.
Turner will play a little third if Votto comes back. Like, if they, you know, look, again, it gets back to that. If your guys are being your guys, then you can fill in the blank there, and it doesn't really matter. If it's not happening,
yeah.
Oh.
Shai Davidi of Sportsnet is in Dunedin. He joins us on Blair and Barker. Hello, Shai.
Hey, actually in Bradenton right now for the finale, the spring training finale.
Wow. Should have known that. Wow. Bradenton, that's a makeable trip. That's a makeable trip.
Yeah, not bad. Hour and five.
It's a nice place too.
I think it's an underrated spring training park.
It is. I think so.
Yeah, definitely for fans. It's not the best to work at, but
no. I've been sent down there a couple of times too, which is not the most fun thing. So I got some bad feelings about that place.
The Reds.
No. Whenever I was on certain teams that were playing against that team,
you had to make the trip.
And I had to make the trip, and then they give you the news after the game. So, yeah.
It's not a bad trip.
Not a good trip when you get sent down, Jeff.
No, definitely not.
It is not.
So, what is at stake? I don't want to say what's at stake for Kevin Gausman today, but let's. I'm feeling unusually optimistic today, because I'm going to get to sleep in tomorrow. I'm feeling unusually optimistic today. So everything goes well for Gausman, right? He looks good. Everything looks good. He has a nice sleep tonight, wakes up tomorrow. He's full of vim and vigor. What happens then?
My guess is that he's pitching game five. Maybe they would switch it around to pitching game four, but I think the Blue Jays and Kevin Gausman are going into this expecting that he's going to open the season for the team. And it's only if something sort of goes awry or they just something occurs today that makes them say, hey, maybe let's pump the brakes here and let's skip a couple starts and go at this a little bit slower. But it doesn't sound like that's the expectation right now. It sounds like the Blue Jays are thinking that Kevin Gausman is going to be a go for the season. And then that basically just ties into the final roster decisions they have to make. It's not official yet, but it really does seem like Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson are going to open the season on the IL. So that's two roster spots. And then do the Blue Jays want to go with a couple guys who offer them a bit more length? My guess is that they'd lean that way right now. But those are the last remaining moving parts at play.
Okay, you talked to Gausman not too long ago. Is there any routine things that he's had to adjust because it sounds like he got ramped up too quick? And, you know, when you do those as a veteran pitcher, you tend to want to step back, look at the totality of what you're trying to get done there, and maybe make some tweaks, some adjustments. Will we see anything on the mound, you know, him slide-stepping, him not trying to throw as hard, him not throwing as many split fingers? Have you heard anything like that?
No, I mean, the conversation I had with him yesterday was a short conversation, and it was basically he wants to feel game conditions, right? He hasn't pitched with the pitch clock, with pitch calm, with dudes wearing a different color jersey for a bit. And he just wants to be there, feel all the things that you're supposed to feel in those moments, and make sure that all those boxes are checked before you pitch in a regular season game. So I don't think he's going to be guarded or protected. He wants to make sure that he can air it out and pitch the way that he's going to need to pitch in regular season. Obviously, there's an extra element of adrenaline that you have when you're pitching in a regular season game as opposed to a spring training finale. But I think he wants to simulate all the things as best as he can that you'd experience in a game to just feel that, you know, he's prepared as much as he can in the circumstances. And then that'll likely involve a couple starts where he's still building up pitch count, getting towards 100 pitches. But that's something that he feels pretty comfortable that they can do.
Shai, what makes more sense? Pick two out of the three. Is it Nate Pearson? Is it Zach Pop? Is it Brendan Little? Pick two of the three. You mentioned there was two spots open because of who's going on the IL to start the season. Who would help the most to begin the season out of those three guys?
I think Brendan Little is interesting, gives him another lefty. One name that I'll throw into the mix that you didn't mention there, and I'm still not sure which way they're going to go with this, but I do at least feel that there's some thought that this might make sense in the short term, is Yariel Rodriguez. Mm-hmm. On Saturday night, he had a really interesting outing against the regular season Baltimore Orioles lineup where he faced all their dudes. He got through three shutout innings. The command maybe wasn't quite as crisp as the Blue Jays would have liked. It was 20 strikes and 43 pitches, but he was able to bear down. And it was only, if I remember correctly, just one ball that was hit hard off him. He got a couple double ground ball double plays. He was able to really just handle the lineup. He never got the sense that he was under duress or anything like that. So I think he's an interesting wild card. If push came to shove, I feel like the Blue Jays might err on the side of caution there, but he's intriguing enough. It might offer a bit more length than a couple of the other names that you mentioned there that maybe finds a way into the mix, at least for the first week and a half or so, until you can get Romano and Swanson back, one of Romano or Swanson back into the mix.
Yeah, it's interesting. John Schneider, during his in-game interview with Buck and Dan on Saturday, I believe it was Saturday, spoke about Yariel Rodriguez and said that he is, frankly, ahead of where we thought he'd be at this time, it was Saturday because they were joshing with John about whether or not he was going to go to Dunedin at night to see Yariel Rodriguez pitch. But I mean, for a manager to come out and say that a guy is ahead of where they thought he'd be, normally you don't say that in spring training. Normally it's always the guy's behind. That, to me, I think you might be able to read something into that. And you've got options on him this year. And I don't think he'd be the type of guy, if you broke camp with him and then you ended up having to make a move 10 days into the season, I don't think he'd be the type of guy that would necessarily be bothered by that, would he?
No, and I actually talked to him after that outing on Saturday, and he basically just said, look, whatever they need right now, like, I trust them. He said if he starts the season in the minors, he understands he's not impatient. He understands that he's got to work through the layoff and all the issues there. He doesn't want to be running before he's jogging. But the other piece to this is that I do think the Blue Jays have sort of a rough idea from an innings perspective of where they want to get with him. And they're probably having some conversations like, well, if we tack on some innings at the front end, are we costing ourselves too many at the back end potentially? And is that worth it right now when we've got different possibilities on the 40-man roster? So that's all part of the mix. But to me, this is someone that you're heavily invested in both short-term and long-term. So that long-term piece is there. But if he's physically ready, and he did concede that his stuff, he still has a bit of stuff to get to. He topped out at 94 on Saturday, and he can definitely get higher than that. So, maybe he does need that little bit of extra time. But, this is one of your guys. Give him, you take 5-7 innings right now out of the gate, and, manage the interim period in between once your staff is fully healthy, and then, worry about later.
Shai, whenever I was in spring training, I really did get the feeling with the people that I was talking to that they feel a little bit more comfortable with the quality of depth that would follow after Manoah, right? Manoah's healthy. You know, you just mentioned some names. For me, I'm not the most confident person when it comes to Mitch White, but it seems like because he's throwing harder, the slider tends to be breaking a little bit more. They feel a little bit more comfortable. They like Ricky Tiedemann. Like, they feel if they needed him, they would use him in the big leagues, at least the people that I've talked to. Obviously, Bowden Francis has turned the corner, and you mentioned Rodriguez. Am I being fair when it comes to the quality of the depth, or should I revisit that and maybe be, you know, a little bit nicer when I talk about those guys in the depth part?
Especially Mitch.
No. I think there's a couple things here. Like, they actually have options this year, right? You remember last year when Manoah got sent down, like, they had to go to a modified four-man staff because they really didn't have anyone that they would trust to fill in. But the Blue Jays feel like they're in a different position now than they were a year ago, and there's some guys that they actually do want to see. I think Ricky Tiedemann is obviously the most intriguing one, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's really just about sort of refining right now and fine-tuning and all that stuff. That's the last piece remaining, just sort of learning how to pitch on a consistent basis. But he's right there knocking on the door, and at some point I think that we see him, right, when there's a need. And he talked about himself after his last outing, which was here in Bradenton Friday, I think, or Thursday, whenever it was last year. And he was just saying, look, my job right now is to just be ready to call. And I know my stuff plays, and I know that they saw that. Like, he's very confident in himself. I think that's a different piece. The Blue Jays didn't have someone like that in the mix last year. And then Brendan Little's interesting. Obviously, Ariel Rodriguez is interesting. Wes Parsons, you can stopgap through a period with. So Chad Dallas is going to start the season at AAA, I believe, and he'll be someone who's knocking on the door at some point. So there are options. Like, now, just because you have options doesn't mean it always works out. But there are guys that you feel more comfortable with in a pinch right now that you just simply didn't have a year ago.
Shai, I'm wondering about Alek Manoah. Where do you think he opens the year? Let me rephrase that. When does he open the year? Is there any chance he's like a 60-day DL guy or at all?
I mean, he threw an inning, when was it? I think Friday, in a live bullpen, and looked really good, right? He was up to 96. Came out, said he feels great, body's in a good spot, needing to build up. I can't see how they would rule him out for 2 months that way, unless there's something new that's popped up. So that would be surprising, but they do have to create a 40-man spot, and I've had a few people reach out to me today saying, hey, what are they going to do with that 40-man spot? How are they going to do this? And I think that's a bit of a question mark right now. I mean, there's no one obvious on the 40 man that you're like, oh, okay, just clear that guy off. So I wonder if I think it's safe to assume the Blue Jays are always doing this, but looking for a potential partner for someone on the fringes of the 40 to create a spot for the spot they need for Daniel Vogelbach. And I think that is where they're at right now. You're just going to figure that out and see how all that shakes down.
Any surprises in terms of the composition of the bench? You know, the final guys, Vogelbach, Clement, Schneider, Servin, obviously, I think we've kind of known that he was going to be on there because of Jansen's injury. Any other surprises? Any surprises at all? And what do you think a realistic expectation is for Joey Votto in terms of a time frame?
Yeah, I think let's start with the last part there. So Votto, he hasn't done very much in the week and a bit since he turned his ankle. And so he was already playing catch up at that point, and now he's got to be at least a couple weeks behind, I would guess. I haven't heard anyone use that specific number, but I would think that in terms of just getting him back, building him up a little bit, and making sure that all the swelling is out of that ankle, all that still has to occur. So that, to me, created the pathway for Vogelbach to be on this team. And you know, I don't know that it's necessarily a surprise, but because I knew the Blue Jays wanted to see someone in that role. But you could have said it, well, if Votto is going to be only a short period of time, you know, do you want to add Vogel back for the time being and then have to make a decision afterwards? Or do you just use Nathan Lucas for now, and when Joey Votto is ready, then you can switch him up with Lucas or something else? So the Blue Jays obviously chose to have Vogel back here. I think part of it is protecting depth and having him, because what if something else happened to Votto and you don't know that? You expect Votto to be a part of this, but you don't know that for sure until he's here. And there's a real, there's a good case to have, you know, a Vogelbach type of bat off the bench to just, you know, take out for a right-handed bat late in the game against a leverage reliever and someone who could change a game with one swing. So I don't know that there's any surprises, but I do think it's interesting how it all played out, and it does set up more machinations for down the road.
Shai, last one before we let you go. I could not get a feel for this when I was down there talking to the people that I was talking to. Do you feel like organizational-wide that they feel like they're going to score more runs this year?
Yes, and I've had a number of conversations with people in the last few days, and just people going like, hey, just look at where our slug is at. Look at how that's different from a year ago. Look at where our batting average is at. Look at our OBP. Just even the basic numbers, and then, you know, some of the hard hit data. Like, the underlying data was good last year, but they just didn't produce enough slug. I think if you look at their numbers, that was where they were lacking. The Blue Jays feel that they might have a little bit more of that, but the bigger piece that, and just a number of people would say this out of the blue, just like look at our at-bats. Look at the way we have a consistent approach. It doesn't guarantee that it's going to produce results or anything like that, but you're just seeing a deliberate plan more consistently than you did a year ago. And that is what gives the Blue Jays the reason for that optimism. Obviously, you know, seeing will be believing, and how it starts playing out, we'll get a read on that beginning Thursday against the Rays. And what a brutal schedule it is right out of the gate. Like, you're getting tested by some tremendous pitching immediately between the Rays, Astros, Yankees, and Mariners. But I think that'll give us a read. But the conversations that I've had, the Blue Jays do feel better about where they are offensively than where they finished last year, for sure.
Shai, we're going to let you run. I know that the skipper's about to speak. Thank you so much for doing this, my friend. Be well. Travel safely. We'll see you back in Toronto.
Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, take care, guys. We'll see you in about a week and a half.
Absolutely. Shai Davidi of Sportsnet. And again, Thursday's the opener in Tampa. And a reminder, we will be on 2-4 Thursday. We'll be on 2-3 on all the Sportsnet TV channels leading up to Blue Jays Central at 4 o'clock. And we'll still be on 360. And we'll also be doing Blue Jays talk following the game this season. Probably the schedule will probably be roughly the same as it was last year in terms of Blue Jays talk. So, three sleeps, Monday, Tuesday, three sleeps. We get going again. The free agent market dominated much of the discussion, obviously, this offseason. There's still, you know, there's still a lot of players without contracts. Still a lot of guys that, you know, may end up resurfacing. Brandon Belt hasn't signed anywhere, has he? Come on, he was a cleanup hitter last year. Don't roll your eyes. He was a cleanup hitter in your 89-win Toronto Blue Jays. Mm. Anyhow, Jordan Montgomery. Now, this is a fascinating case because Jordan Montgomery is still a free agent. And I would have thought that he might be one of the first free agent pitchers to go because, you know, they've been there, done that thing.
He's predictable.
He is predictable. Yep. You know what he's going to give you.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, oh boy, as we're seeing, given the state of starting pitching and the health of starting pitching, that is absolutely, that is valuable. So Jordan Montgomery is the last of the Scott Boras clients out there. Of course, we know that the Boras clients have signed short-term contracts, most of them. Jim Bowden, former MLB GM, was on MLB Network Radio this past weekend talking about Jordan Montgomery. And I want to play the clip because I found what he said interesting. And if you're a Blue Jays fan, maybe a little concerning.
My understanding from my sources is that Montgomery's market is here, and so it's probably going to happen this week because it's becoming really competitive. They have two long-term offers on the table for Montgomery, so he's not necessarily going to get this short-term deal like we thought with that Blake Snell and Bellinger got. But, you know, one team to keep in mind is the Orioles, because that sale, I believe, gets finalized this week, if I'm not mistaken, at least the first 40% does.
Right.
Maybe Dave Rubenstein comes in as the new owner and wants to make a mark. Can you imagine you take over the team and then you sign Jordan Montgomery right away? I mean, there couldn't be a better message you could send to a fan base.
That was Jim Bowden talking about Jordan Montgomery's availability. First of all, it's interesting that he hasn't signed yet. And I think Jim's probably right in this. He may end up getting a longer term contract than those other guys, even though he hasn't signed yet. You may see somebody give Jordan Montgomery a 3-year deal. Like, I'd give him a 3 or 4 year deal. I'd absolutely give him a 3 or 4
year
deal.
Yeah, I gave it to him already. But obviously they wanted more than that. That's the obvious thing here going into this because of who his agent is. They're wanting way more than that.
Well, and we don't know if there's some, frankly, let's just say it. We don't know if there's something going on with the agent as well.
Yeah, I mean, and
we just don't.
Well, it sounded like Texas was out of it. It sounded like the Yankees were out of it. Like, those are two big markets that you're racing from who you were counting on to bid against for your client. So, yeah, there's some things there.
But if you are the Orioles, you know, you look at where they are right now with, I mean, spring training doesn't matter, but they've had a good spring. A lot of people are picking them to win the East. You know, we know all about the young players that are coming up. They do have Corbin Burnes. He's their opening day starter. He is a free agent at the end of the year. If you could sign a guy like Jordan Montgomery to a 3 or 4 year contract, like, Jordan Montgomery at worst is going to be your number two starter. Even if a guy like Kyle Bradish gets completely healthy this year and comes back next year and is your opening day guy, at the very least, Jordan Montgomery is your number two starter. It makes perfect sense to me for a team like the Orioles.
Yeah, it does too. And how will they handle expectations? It's different. That's the Blue Jays.
He's a guy who's if it counts for anything,
absolutely it does.
And I think it does for
Can't
pitching
teach experience.
I think it does for
Sometimes
pitching.
Sometimes you got to pay for it. How do you work through it?
You've got a guy with expectations.
How do you deal with the Yankees? He knows that. How do you deal with the Blue Jays? How do you work through good right-handed lineups? He knows how to do that. He's won in the biggest of games.
How do you stay healthy throughout a full season?
How do you do all those things? He can teach the younger guys how to do that. They don't have a lot of quality depth in the rotation.
Nope.
That's their one little thing, right? You add him to the mix, now it lengthens it, and you don't have to worry about that seventh and eighth guy. You know, in April and May, you can worry about the two or three big guys up front. So yeah, absolutely make their team better. You're doing that so it takes pressure mentally and physically off of other guys who have not been there and done it before. And let's be honest, some guys in their everyday lineup that may take a step back, right? It's just human nature.
Not even like, a big step back.
Now it's sort of, right, people know how to get you out. They're going to work to figure that out. I'm not saying it's going to happen.
But
it might happen.
Nobody was picking Gunnar Henderson as an MVP candidate last year.
No. So you might need some run prevention throughout the season, and adding a guy like that who can, you know, give you length, which is a big deal. So yeah, it would make perfect sense. Will it happen? I mean, I wouldn't count on it. Still, the Orioles. Like, we don't know what the ownership's thinking, and
The new ownership is, the indications are that they are going to spend money.
Yeah, when? Now? Later? I'm sure they have a day when they're going to spend. It would make sense.
If you need a starting pitcher today, you're probably going to need a start. If you're the Orioles, you're going to need a starting pitcher at some point this year. You're going to need another starting pitcher.
But I'm sure that agent that he has is a problem. Like, I'm sure he's not the easiest dude to deal with, and you shouldn't be, right? That's why you hire him, if you're a player, is to, you know, get the last little penny you can possibly get. Good for him if they can do that. But I just wonder what it would take, how much it would take. Does he care to come back to the American League East? Like, there's some things there, right?
Yeah, again, he is a free agent. Ultimately, it's his decision.
It is.
Where he wants to go. Interesting discussion with Shai. I want to kind of circle back to that, particularly when it comes to the pitching. Again, let's assume Gausman is good today. And what do you need to see from Gausman today in order to
to be comfortable with
I think
him.
The happy conversation after a start. That's what it is. I'm not sure it's so much the stuff.
The conversation
after the game. Somebody walk up to him, stick a microphone in his face. What's he say? It's about hard contact. That's sort of how he judges every outing he has, is how much hard contact he gives up. I think that's the one thing, right? It's probably not so much the velocity. We've seen the dip. And it's been moody occasionally, right? It's been all over the place. So it's very hard to hone in what he's happy with when it comes to velocity. I'm sure two strikes, he throws a split finger, gets somebody out, he's happy about that, right? I just want the happy conversation after his start. You get that? He wakes up tomorrow, he tells Pete Walker he's raring and ready to go. Mm-hmm. Then they'll work in either if he needs the extra day, if he needs the extra 2 days, if it's the last day against Tampa, first day against Houston, or they work around Houston, they get him to the Yankees. I just get back to that. Don't rush it. It's not his fault what's going on around him. Whenever he hits the ground, he hits it running. And because of what's going on at the back end of your pen, you need length from him. And you need quality length. You got to make sure he's 1,000% raring and ready to go. So I'm sure they'll do that. For me, Pete Walker's the best communicator in baseball when it comes to his pitchers. He will make sure of that. Between the two, between the parties, everybody will be happy. So let's be patient and hopefully get the best out of Kevin.
Play a fun game here.
I don't like these.
Let's play a fun game here. End of the year.
Not prepared for this.
End of the year. Who's going to have more innings in the majors? Alek Manoah, Yariel Rodriguez, or Ricky Tiedemann? End of the year.
Since I'm picking them to make the playoffs, I think for me it would have to be Alek Manoah.
Okay.
Alek Manoah starting makes it easier for them to work in Francis the way they want to work in, not have to use Mitch White, because I know they're happy and they'll say it out loud. I'm not sure they want to abuse that, him working through a bunch of whatever he's working through. I'm not real happy. Now, Yariel Rodriguez, look, you can calm down some things that he's doing now. There's a reason why, you listen to the people that talk about him. Say the first thing, he only threw this many strikes and this many pitches. You can't do that in the big leagues. You can do that overseas and against lesser competition. You can't do that in the big leagues, especially American League East. So don't be in a hurry with him. Ricky Tiedemann, he's got small spurt stuff, right? It's all the other things that go with the longevity of a season, right? It's probably got about 140 innings. When will they use that? How much will they use him, right? It's okay to call him up, give a couple starts, send him back down. They can do that. So I'm picking them to make the playoffs. I'm going to say they are a better team when Alek Manoah is throwing because of who else they want to use in certain situations. So I will pray that it's Alek. I wouldn't be surprised if it would be Rodriguez. I don't want it to be Ricky Tiedemann. I don't want it to be Mitch White. I don't want it to be Bowden Francis. So
that's good.
I'm circling the wagon.
That's exactly how I would answer it.
But if I want to make the playoffs, if you're a fan of the Jays, you better hope and pray it's Alek Manoah.
Yeah.
How's that?
Yeah. That's fair. But I am with you. I do think of the other options. There is a chance it might be Yariel
Rodriguez. Bowden Francis is the Swiss Army knife. They love him in short bursts. His stuff is off the charts. It's the 60 pitches on.
Right.
They're real worried about that. That's why they're more comfortable. If a healthy, confident, mindset-wise, Manoah is raring and ready to go, and, the sinker command is there and on point, they're a better team because of that.
Yeah, and the other thing we've seen with this front office, too, whatever people may say, they will move early on their bullpen if they have to. I mean, Ross Atkins has done that in the past. If they have to, they will move early in the bullpen. Think of the deals for Richards.
Pete Walker, Pete Walker be like, don't be afraid to bring in better hitters. Let's not lie about it. Pete Walker the last couple of years has done his job.
Yeah.
A+. Now it's for the other part of that to step up and do their part. Yeah. It's working together, Jeff.
Oh, it's all coming together. It's all coming together. Much like Blair and Barker, which tomorrow will come together along with the rest of you at 2 o'clock Eastern. We'll be on 2 to 4 Eastern on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and Sportsnet. That's our new time slot up until whenever the Leafs are eliminated from the playoffs, which will probably be in the first round. So there we go. 3 more sleeps, Barker. 3 more sleeps. 1 o'clock, first pitch today, Jays and Pirates. Enjoy the baseball. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Don't forget, 2 Eastern. 2 Eastern tomorrow. Have a great day.